Boker Tov, world. Today's daf, Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf chet, and we were talking about what appeared to be a stira between the two brises. So we had two brises of someone who brings a get in a boat, from a boat, basically, in Eretz Yisrael. We had taken for granted until now that this boat was in some river. Let's say it was in the Yama Kinneret, within Eretz Yisrael, and the Machlokes, therefore, between these two brightot, either we said it wasn't the Machlokes, one was talking about where the Sfina was Gosheshet, and one where the Sfina was not Gosheshet, and that would be according to the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, that the question of where the boat is moored is essential, because if it's attached to the ground, so then it's part of Eretz Yisrael, and if it's not attached to the ground, then it's not. So that was one possible explanation. The other possible explanation is that we're not talking about two different cases. We're talking about two different shitot. Namely, according to Rebbe Yehuda, it's dependent on the actual contact of the boat to the land underneath. And according to the Rabbanan, even if it's in the middle of the river, we would consider perhaps the water to be part of the earth itself, maybe. It was one of the ways we understood the Rabbanan. In any event, all of that was based on our assuming that the possible machlokas, or at least the situation between those two brightot, we're talking about a water in Eretz Yisrael, guf, surrounded by Eretz Yisrael. That, says Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, is a mistake. Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak Omar, which is where we're up to on Daf Ches, Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak Omar, no, if the boat was in Eretz Yisrael, why would the question of whether vis-a-vis the things which grow in the boat, legabe meiser and legabe shvias, and that question of the Rabbanan versus Rebbe Yehuda about whether it has to be touching the ground in order to be chayev or not, what does that have to do with a get, for heaven's sakes? We're talking about things that have to do with that. We're talking about issues that had to do with Eidim Mitzuyim Lekaima and whether the Bekim Lishmam was irrelevant, all of this discussion. And therefore, Binaharot Eretz Yisrael, the Kulema Plige, nobody would suggest that this has something to do with that machlokas. What you need for the get to be on a boat where the land on the boat would be taking nourishment from Eretz Yisrael. I mean, why would I think that? Now, the Ki Plige, actually, they're arguing about the actual Mediterranean and whether the Mediterranean is part of Eretz Yisrael or not part of Eretz Yisrael. That's what they're arguing about. So the question actually is, and this is the way Rashi makes it clear that he understands it. The question is whether the Mediterranean is outside of Eretz Yisrael and that the Gvul of Eretz Yisrael is actually the edge of the sea, except that where the water is actually surrounded by Eretz Yisrael, so to speak, it becomes water in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, that part of the border in which the sea extends into what would be the landmass if it went straight from the northern border to the southern border, that's the question, the area within Eretz Yisrael. So this is the machlokas. So if you're talking about Naharos in Eretz Yisrael, so then there would be no question. The question is, what about the Yam HaGadol, the Tanya? Ezehu Eretz veZehu Chutzlaretz. We're going to learn this simply like Rashi, and therefore we'll learn it as discussing the question entirely to Reyamnon, Bino Gea, the northern boundary, and the southern. So we're talking like this. What is considered to be Eretz Yisrael, and what is considered to be Chutz La'aretz? So this would be Nogea, to the north and to the south of that line. So what the Ma'abraita suggests is that Kol Sheshofea V'Yored, Miturei Amnon V'Lifnim Eretz Yisrael. Since the Targum of the Hor Ha'har is Turei Amnon, so because of that, we understand that when the Torah describes the northern border of Eretz Yisrael, it's talking about Turei Amnon, and this area defines the exact place where the northern border runs. So where in that Ture Amnon, which is a large, large mountainous area. So where exactly does the border run? It runs along the peak of Ture Amnon. And therefore, anything which is from the watershed on the top of Ture Amnon south is Eretz Yisrael. From the top of Ture Amnon to the north, that watershed is defined at, that's the Gvul. And therefore, we now know the full extent of the border of Eretz Yisrael on the north, big machlokas in about precisely where Ture Amnon is and how far north it extends. And most are talking about areas in Barnea's neighborhood, in Turkey, and in Lebanon. And when Barnea was in the Marines, they used to sing from Tripoli. Some learned it's around Tripoli. All of these, they made up all these songs about Barnea's service. It's a long historical story, which Barnea, I think, has actually gifted us with a few hundred postings on today's daf in case anybody was trying to sleep. We now know why we have everyone here on time for the daf. For the daf today. Okay. But in any event, these Ture Amnon, according to Rashi, is the line that will define the northern boundary. Anything north is Chutz Laretz. Anything south is Eretz Yisrael. Now, the question is, what about the area that is to the west, okay? So how far does Eretz Yisrael go westwards? Well, Hanisin Shabayam. So how about these islands? You know, if you buy a house in Cyprus, is that the Kharbi Chayev in Meisr? And what's the din of that? So Hanisin Shabayam, Roinotam, Kiluchut Matuach Alehin, Miture Amnon Ad Nachal Mitzrayim. So therefore, according to the Tanakhama, the Yam actually is Chutz Laretz. It's just that if you would take a line directly from the top on the northern northwest point of Ture Amnon, which is the border on the north, the western part of that border, draw a line from it, and go all the way down to Nachal Mitzrayim, which again is also very open to discussion, where that is, most learn that it's Wadi El Arish, as you know. Fine. Again, we're not like very interested in this because we're only coming here not to actually define the Gvul, but to define the difference between the two brises. So therefore, when we do Shvias and complete Shvias, of course, we will have for Barnea's detailed visions of all of these areas. So therefore, since the seashore is the Gvul, as Rashi explains it, but the seashore, where the sea extends into the land area, which ought to be along that line, so then it's considered to be water in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, minachut v'lifnim Eretz Yisrael. So any land, and even the Yam, of course, but we're talking about the land because it's in terms of land that we could discuss the Kedusha of Meisr and so on. So therefore, any islands would actually be islands in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Tanna Kamma. But any islands that would show up from that line, running from the north to the south on that diagonal, from the northern border at the most west point, all the way down to the southern border at the most west point, anything outside of that line towards the west is Chutz Laretz. Towards the east is Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda, however, learns, no, the line runs from Eretz Yisrael to the ocean. And therefore, kol shekeneged Eretz Yisrael, hareyu ke'Eretz Yisrael. Anything that is directly west of the landmass of Eretz Yisrael is part of Eretz Yisrael. Because it says in the Pasuk, ugvul yam, what is the western border of Eretz Yisrael? There's an extra word here. V'ayalachem hayam hagadol ugvul. Zeh yalachem gvul yam. What is the meaning of ugvul? I don't understand. Are you describing the western border as the yam hagadol or not? Therefore, the meaning of ugvul means to include the yam hagadol in that gvul, says Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, what you need to do is to draw a line directly to the ocean, and then anything within the two lines, so in other words, south of the line that started at Turiamna, and north of the line that started at Nachal Mitzrayim, any of that land is considered to be within Eretz Yisrael, and anything to the north and south of those lines are actually outside of Eretz Yisrael. So then we view the line as drawn from the town of Kifluria all the way to the ocean, and from Nachal Mitzrayim all the way to the ocean. Now Kifluria is on the very top of Turei Amnon, and Minachut v'lefim Eretz Yisrael, Minachut v'lechutz chutz l'aretz. Actually, Tosfos suggests that if you're living in Spain, as we are, that's really part of Eretz Yisrael, because, you know, the line cuts through some of that area, and therefore, till the ocean, what can you do? Maybe Kafluria is really California. Who knows? Anyway, but most learned, first of all, does is we don't pass like Reb Yehuda, so we don't have to worry about taking off Meisers here. And furthermore, it may only refer not to land masses, but only to the Nisim Shebayam. Basha Einkein, the land mass. This is why you'll notice Reb Barnea is really in the sea today, fluid. And that's in order to make sure that we won't forget Tosfos' answer, that we're only talking about those areas that are fluid, not the areas that are actual land masses. So London doesn't have to worry because they're outside of the line. What can you do? Portugal, Gibraltar, the Israelis will be there any day now. But in any event, this is the machlokas between the two brises. So it makes a great deal of sense. And
Does Cartagena need Carthage?
I think so. But I was going to ask Reb Barnea.
It's in Menachos. I didn't get to look. I'm just seeing the name. If so, I was there, and it's now part of the neighborhood.
There we go. So. We now understand that the only meaning of Reb Barnea's trips is to establish the gvulos of Eretz Yisrael, just as Moshe Rabbeinu was shown Ad Hayam HaGadol. So, and that was Koveya, all the Chiyuvim of Meisr. So too, Reb Barnea, Kol Makom Shira'ah Barnea is considered to be a chelik of Eretz Yisrael, as you'd love it. In any event, okay. So now the question is this word Ugvul, which Reb Yehuda used to define his approach. So now we have two prices about three men in a boat, a get in a boat. So that would mean that if you were on a boat along the Mediterranean and you were directly across from the area of Eretz Yisrael itself, so the one that says that is part of Eretz Yisrael, that's referring to Reb Yehuda. The one that says that if you're on the Mediterranean, meaning if you're on the Mediterranean outside of the line that's drawn north-south, because that's the real seashore, that is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Those are the two brayot. And now the question is, what do the Rabbanan do with the word gvul? Rabbanan hai u gvul. So my avdile, how do they explain that in the word of the extra word and the border? No, that comes to tell me, mi boile l'nisi, that's gufa, the idea that any islands that are over there, you shouldn't think that the end is the actual coastline, so that when you come down into the Yam, you're going to be going outside of Eretz Yisrael. No, that's what it's coming to include. And why doesn't Reb Yehuda hold that that's necessary? He says, because obviously, why would I need a pusik? If these are the gvulos that the Torah describes of Eretz Yisrael, so then that means that any water within those gvulos is part of Eretz Yisrael. Why would I think that the Yam HaGadol gvul would mean the seashore as opposed to the sea outside of the gvulos? That's good for the machlokas. Now, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah is that Rabbi Meir Omer Akko ke'eretz Yisrael. But there's areas, as we know, that are far north of Akko. Because the area of Syria, which became part of Eretz Yisrael at the time of David, which is Aram Tzova, Aram Narayim, and David went out to capture that area. So what would be the din since David HaMelech had made them part of Eretz Yisrael? because you're only discussing the original gvulos. So boi minei Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, what would be the din vis-a-vis ha-mocher avdo l'suria? Is that like mocher b'chutz l'aretz domi or lo? Now the reason we're bringing this here is because it triggers our proof, which now talks about our Mishnah, about Akko. And the question over here is, the din is that the Rabbanon were gozer, if somebody sells an Evet to Chutz La'aretz, then the buyer is really messed up. Because since he took that Evet outside of Eretz Yisrael, so he forced them to be over on the Isra of leaving Eretz Yisrael, took away the mitzvahs that are Nagia Eretz Yisrael from him, and therefore we give that buyer a knas, and he is considered to be out his Evet, and he doesn't get compensation, and that's what I want to know. If you sold to Surya, is that the same thing, or is that not considered to be like selling it to Chutz La'aretz, in which case he can keep his Evet? Because otherwise, if it's Kemocher L'Chutz La'aretz, the Evet goes scot-free. Omar Leis, Reb Chiya bar Abba said, well, that's the Mishnah that we just learned here in Gittin. Rabbi Meir Omer, Akko Ke'eretz Yisrael L'Gittin. Why do you think that Rabbi Meir stresses the word L'Gittin? I'll tell you, because he meant to tell us. L'Gittin, yes, Akko is Eretz Yisrael. B'Benogeh La'Avadim, Akko is not like Eretz Yisrael. And somebody who would sell an Eved to someone living in Akko, the Eved would go free. The only reason that we treat Akko Keretz Yisrael is because of the din of Lishma, Alibet Rabba, and the fact that Edim are Mitzuyim L'Kaima. Now, if you're telling me that Akko is only Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis Gittin and not vis-a-vis Avadim, I mean, imagine how much further it is to get up to Aleppo, to these areas. Of course, Syria, which is farther away, is obviously not going to be like Eretz Yisrael. And if you sell an Eved there, then in fact the Eved will go free. Tana Rabbana, once we're talking about Surya, then we have to define a lot of issues. What is actually unique about Surya? Well, the problem with Surya is that we consider it to be what's called a Kivush Yochid instead of a Kivush Rabbin. And the question is what exactly that means. Now, if you take a look in the Rambam, the Lashon of the Rambam is as follows. This he brings in Hilchos Trumos, where he's talking about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So he writes, Ha'aratzot shekavash David, chutz l'Eretz Kinan. For instance, Aram Naharayim, Aram Tzova, Halab, the Keyotzibayim. Even though he was a Melech Yisrael, and even though he had a Sanhedrin, and it's Al-Pi Beit Din Agadol, does not have a din of Ke'eretz Yisrael l'chol davar, but on the other hand, it's not like Chutz La'aretz l'chol davar. It's not like Bavel and Mitzrayim. Ela yatzu michlal Chutz La'aretz, the level of its Kedusha is beyond that of Chutz La'aretz, but le'heyotan Ke'eretz Yisrael lo higil. It has not arrived at the same darga of Eretz Yisrael. Why? Why are they less than the rest of Eretz Yisrael? Because David HaMelech captured these areas before concluding the complete kivush of Eretz Yisrael. And as the Medrash puts it, which Tosis brings over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to David, right in your own neighborhood, you haven't managed to get rid of the Goyim, and you're going to go now and add all of these other areas. You can't do that. Your first responsibility is to complete the Kibush Eretz Yisrael, and only then can you add to Eretz Yisrael. So this is the Pashas, the way the Rambam understands it, and therefore, Ilu Tafas Kol Eretz Kanan Gvulotea first, V'achar Kach Kovash Aretzot Achirot, then the Kibush would have been Ki'ilu Keretz Yisrael l'chol davar. V'ha'aratzot shekavash David, hein ha'nikra'im Surya, that's the end of that halacha in the Rambam. Now Rashi brings here his understanding that kivush yachid focuses on kivush yachid because it's a yachid, meaning that where you had the milchamot at the time of Knisa L'Aretz before the chalukah into the nachalot, So at that point, everyone was fighting for everyone else because there was not yet a Nachal. Therefore, it's as if Yisrael was fighting for a common goal altogether, Kivush Eretz Yisrael. Masha Einkein, David, who did not do that Kivush of Eretz Yisrael, and was interested here in expanding the realm of his reign, is considered to be an individual because he's not acting on behalf of all Yisrael, where the primary acting would be to be Kivush all of Eretz Yisrael for Yisrael. This is how Rashi understands it. Therefore, according to Rashi, if the entire purpose of this war is for a Yochid to extend his reign, it's called a Kivush Yochid. Okay, this is a fascinating machlokas. But anyway, getting back to whatever the reason is, obviously we understand that Surya has elements of Eretz Yisrael and elements of Chutz La'aretz. So now, let's take a look at some of those issues, because there's quite a few issues. Tana Rabbanan, b'shlosha drachim shafta Surya l'Eretz Yisrael, u'b'shlosha l'Chutz La'aretz. There's six different issues that need to be addressed. One is, of course, the Gezeira on the Afar of Chutz La'aretz. The Afar of Surya is considered to be Tomei, just like Afar Chutz La'aretz. Hamocher Avdo, number two. Hamocher Avdo l'Surya. Kemocher b'Chutz La'aretz. As we just discussed, the Eved goes free. Hamevi get Misurya, kemevi mi'Chutz La'aretz. And, as we've seen, since Akko is the northern boundary, Kol Shekein, somebody who brings a get from Surya, is considered to bring from Chutz La'aretz. Now, there's also three issues in which Surya is like Eretz Yisrael. Uvishlosha domet Eretz Yisrael. Chayevet b'maser ubishvi'it, just like Eretz Yisrael. Harotzeh li'kanes la b'tahara nichnas. If somebody wants to get in to Surya and not become tomei, there are ways to do it, as we'll see. V'hakoneh sadeh b'Surya, somebody who buys a field in Surya, it's as if he bought that field in Beit Shemesh, Kekoneh b'parvarei Yerushalayim, in the metropolitan area of Yerushalayim. The real meaning is like the suburbs of Yerushalayim, which, if you take a look at the metropolitan area of Yerushalayim, the population of that is unbelievably almost 1.5 million people, twice the size of Tel Aviv. Astounding. Anyway, so then it would be the same as, I mean, what is this, a moral statement that the Gemara is going to ask? What's the difference? So let's go through each one. We said it's chayevet b'maser b'shviyat keretz Yisrael. Why? Because the Tana holds that kivush yochid is considered to be a shmei kivush legabe the dinim of trumas or maisras. So this Tana holds it is. Harotzeli kanes la b'tahara nichnas. There are ways to get into Surya and to maintain the level of tahara that you had before. And how is that possible? In the first part of the Braita, when you were talking about ways that Surya is similar to Chutz La'aretz, you said that the Gezerah of Tumah Ta'amim on the Afar is actually Tamei. And now you seem to be changing your mind. Now you're saying that, no, it's okay. No, I didn't. All I said was there's a way to get in. Now, the way to get in is by helicoptering in. Because basically, if you're coming in B'Shidat Teva U'Migdal, after all, we have the Braita that says, Hanichnas le'eretz ha'amim b'shidat teva u'migdal. Rebbe is metame, but that's because Rebbe holds that when you have a moving ohel, so the helicopter is moving, it's not going to be a mechitza in front of Tumas Meis ba'ohel, and therefore it doesn't protect you. Whereas Rebbe Yossi b'Rebbe Yehuda is metaher. However, even Rebbe only said that you can't get into Eretz Amim with a helicopter and still be Tahar. That's because he was talking about literally Eretz Amim. Because there we have two separate gezeras. We have a gezera on the gush, and we have a gezera on the air, the alavira. Now, you remember we discussed Big Machlokas, which occurs here again between Rashi and Tosfos, about whether what this means is that the gush is metame b'meis b'ohel, and that's the meaning of avir, which is what Rashi understands, or whether, on the contrary, the question over here is whether there is a separate gezerah called avir, which is not the same as tumas ohel, and therefore, even if you're protected from the tumas ohel of the gush that's underneath, it's not going to help you to protect you from the avir, which is a gezerah of simply being in the space and not being exposed to the laser zapping of the tumas space from underneath. Fine, this machlokas obviously has the same hashlachot here. But what's important to us over here is to answer what appears to be a contradiction. So either the answer is that we're talking about the difference between gush and airspace, or whether we're talking about gush in terms of maga and noce versus tumas ohel of the gush. But in any event, where it came to Eretz Ha'amim, there was a gezerah both on the gush and the avir. How we define that, Rashi and Tosfos. Masha Inkein, when it comes to Surya, even though there was a gezerah of gush, these were two separate gezerahs. Avir Eretz Ha'amim and gush Eretz Ha'amim, and have different elements that concern us in terms of Tuma. And in Surya, they only applied the gezerah of gush. They never were gozer on the actual avir, and therefore there's a way of getting there without being tameh. And then the third thing was that if you buy a field in Syria, then that's like buying a field in the Jerusalem metropolitan area. So what is that nogea bichlal? Hom Rav Sheshes, it's nogea very important halacha, that the din is that if somebody has an option to buy a piece of property in Yerushalayim, so he is allowed to write the shtar on Shabbos. So in other words, if you're buying something from a goy, and it's Shabbos, and the goy wants to leave on Shabbos, and he's not going to stay over to get a contract, and now you want to buy something in Eretz Yisrael. Well, if you're buying in Syria, it's like buying mamish in Yerushalayim. Legabi this halacha, that since the akum will not be there mitzvah Shabbos, you have the shtar written on Shabbos. What? Come on, what are you, crazy? The Shabbos, what do you mean? Could be mechal Shabbos? Oh, obviously, that's not what it means. It's the way, as Rava explained, that it means that you can say to a goy, you get a goyish lawyer to write up a contract, and you can say that he should do it even on Shabbos, even though normally Amir la'akum is usher, in order to have yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, and by definition, purchasing a piece of property that was owned by a goy in Eretz Yisrael is the maximum yishuv Eretz Yisrael, to replace the goyim with yishuv Yisrael, that we are mekel, that there's no din of the isser of Amir la'akum. And this is only true for this, it's not a general halacha in mitzvahs that you could be, for any mitzvah, you could go ahead and be over on Amir la'akum. There's a special din in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So if I gave that Mir La'akum as a Shvus min Rabbanan, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, lo gazur Rabbanan at all. Fine. Now, once we've already raised the question of the interrelationship of the get to the dinim of Surya and to Meicher Avdei, you should also realize that the inyan of Eved is nogea get, directly. It's not that these are two different sugyas, really, because when it comes to the get that has to be given to an Eved, we have the same halachas of Bifanai Nechtav and Bifanai Nechtam as we do of Gitei Noshim. And we have the same halachas that the Eved who brings his own get can say Bifanai Nechtam, the same way that a woman who brings her own get, in the curious circumstances where the husband told her, take this get, but I'm not giving it to you as a get yet, and bring it to Beis Din and have them give it to you, that then she's a shliach, and that then she would say, even on her own get, that this is b'fanai nechtav v'nai nechtam. Now, this is true about an Eved as well. So, Tana Rabbanan, if an Eved brings his get from Chutz Laretz, and in that get, it says, you and whatever I own are now given to you. Okay, we have a curious situation over here, because the halacha of believing a shliach who says b'fadai nechta, b'fadai nechta, that's all very nice when it comes to the special performative contracts. Those performative contracts are gitei noshim, are gitei avodim, but we're talking over here about a contract that has two different elements. It's performative in the sense that it allows the eved to be yotzei l'cheres, but it's a normal contract in terms of the din of his owning these things. And if he was meant to be kainet with the contract, so then it's an actual performative contract vis-a-vis that too. But we never made a din of b'fanai nechtav or b'fanai nechtam to be the equivalent of not needing kiyum shtoreis when it came to anything but these special performative contracts that allow a woman not to worry about igun and allows an eved to be certain of his status, right? So now what's the din? So the din is that in terms of the part of the contract that is making him a ben chorin, that part of the contract is indeed valid. And we don't need to have an outside kiyum. But benogea, anything else, it has no meaning. So we believe his shlichut, and that means that he's free, but we don't believe his kiyum hashtar. Fine, sorry. He does not own any of those things. Now, but this might be because of the phraseology. I mean, basically what we have over here is two contracts. One contract is on himself, and that's the get shichrur. And the other contract, being as it mentions it as a separate clause, nechasai, that other contract we're looking at as not having had any kind of kiyum. But what if he would have only said the one line? It wouldn't have had two clauses. It would have said, everything I own are given by these presences to you. Now, what about that? Because he didn't write over there that the Eved is different. So now, can it be that since it's all one statement, so then the din of b'fanai nechtav or b'fanai nechtam runs across the whole thing? And that if we're going to have to accept b'fanai nechtav or b'fanai nechtam in terms of his own shichrur, so then that means that the other part is by definition, that was the way that he got his shichrur, by being part of what it is that this person owns. He's also part of what he owns. So since he gave over everything that he owns to the Eved, so now the Eved owns himself. But how can we distinguish between his owning himself and his owning anything else, since it was all one statement? So how would that work? Omer Abaye, look, mitoch shekana atzmo kana nechasi. I mean, if we made this takana vis-a-vis the get shichrur, and the way that the get shichrur here is phrased is only in terms of the Eved being part of a transference, a general transference of property, well, how in the world could we have a general transference of property only being legal for a particular transference of property? It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, it must be that that takana b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam, that he's ne'manan, would in this case have to include the entire statement. And therefore, he is kena everything. Omar le'arava to Abaye, I don't understand. Himself, he can be kena because he has the same din as the get isha. I mean, that's a very special halacha. But why in the world is he being kena the nechasim? I mean, the nechasim is a regular shtar, and therefore it requires a normal kiyum shtarot. Well, where the heck is the kiyum shtarot? Midah havi kiyum shtarot da alma, so he shouldn't be able to get that. And actually, what happened afterwards, now this argument of Rava didn't make any impact on Abaye, but Abaye on his own, as Tosis explains, came to recognize that actually it should be the other way around. And in other words, the way Rava is viewing it, even though it didn't particularly mention the difference between being kona yourself and be kona the other property in the contract, and that doesn't matter because legally speaking, there are two separate contracts here. One which provides the shichrur, and one which provides the kinyan on property. So even though it's not phrased that way, I can legally separate the ideas into two and utilize the takana of b'fanai nechtam to give him his get shechrur while remaining stuck with the old problems of kiyum shtaras when it comes to the rest. That's Rava's opinion. Abaye never agreed with that, and he still doesn't agree with that. You can't legally parse a contract into two parts if it's phrased as a single clause. That's what Abaye holds. The question is, and therefore what? So the first opinion of Abaye was, well, if you can't parse it, then it has to be believed in its entirety. Now Abaye says, now wait a minute, if you can't parse it, then you don't believe it in its entirety. But you can't believe it. In other words, if we're not going to be able to be mekayim this contract on the basis of b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam, so then it's not a contract at all, not vis-a-vis himself, and not vis-a-vis the property. So now Abaye has changed and says, look, if he couldn't be koneh in a chasim, and the only way that he would be koneh himself is as part of the nechasim, so then he can't be koneh atzmo, because how are we supposed to divide it into two pieces? And therefore, I still disagree with Rava, but I realize it should be in the other direction. And when Rava heard Abaye's epiphany, he said to him, your new epiphany is just as ridiculous as your old opinion. Amalei Rava, listen. Bishlamed in a chasim, I understand why you're saying you can't be kun in a chasim. Because this is a normal shtar, and this is the din of a normal shtar. But why could he not be kun himself? If there's a special takana, just like by a get isha, that b'fanai nechtam b'fanai nechtam provides the equivalent of eidim mitzuyim l'kaimo, so that should still obtain here. Therefore, I say, absolutely not. I don't care whether the contract separated the clauses or whether it wrote it all together. Echad zeh, the echad zeh, whether the first case where you mentioned separately you and all my kinyanim, or whether it's all together, all my kinyanim are now given to you, it's exactly the same. He's koneh himself, because we believe b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam, and no further kiyum shtaras is required. But on the normal contract, there's no such din of b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam, obviously. And therefore, you need kiyum shtaras. And therefore, he was not koneh anything of the property. Omer le'rav ada bar matan l'rava, I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. I mean, you seem to be saying that there's a din of palginan dibura. Now listen, it's very important not to get this confused with the overall issue of palginan dibura. Because normally palginan dibura means that we believe half of what you say, and we don't believe the other half legally because it's irrelevant legally. So let's say somebody complains that he was raped. So now he identifies his rapist. What's the din? So he is believed about the fact that that other person raped someone, right? But the question over here is, can he, in fact, be mitztaref with another aid to be mechayev that person? So can we split the part about himself? Obviously, he's not believed if he is a Baal Din. But if he's talking about his own participation willingly in that rape, so it's not a rape, I mean, but in that homosexual encounter. So what would be the din? Can we believe him? If we don't believe him vis-a-vis himself, we could believe him vis-a-vis the other person. That's a question of splitting what the person said. That's also called palginan dibure. That's the classic example of palginan dibure in the classic sense of palginan dibure. We'll take half of what you said and not the other half of what you said. Here it has nothing to do with that at all. This is borrowed language, right? Here we're believing everything he said. It's just that everything that he said is only relevant to part of the contract and not to the other part of the contract. Therefore, it has nothing to do with the issue of his believability. That's important to recognize, otherwise we get into all kinds of things that are really not nugea, this sugya at all. But there is a concept of paldina nibura as a borrowed term in exactly the same case that we have, where we believe him entirely, except believing him entirely is not going to be sufficient to be legal in one aspect. It'll be legal in the other aspect. That's what we're talking about over here. So Rava, who believes entirely, b'fanai nichtam, says, well, so he goes out free. And Abaya is saying, yes, but since it's irrelevant to this contract, at least in part, it has to be irrelevant to this contract in total. And Rava is saying, why? Why can't something be believed for whatever it's useful and be irrelevant for whatever it's not useful? I don't understand why that follows. So therefore, Ravada Bar Mazda points out to Rava that you seem to be going, according to the Shita of the Tanoim, of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon holds that Palginan Dibura in this sense. And it's a fascinating issue because we have this as a Mishnah. It's actually a Mishnah in Peah, which is why Moshe Forman is actually here today, somewhere behind that K. And that's the K kosher on Peah. It's one of the few Mishnayos that he believes are kosher, apparently. And it says over there, fascinating machlokas. Somebody who was kotev kol nechasav la'avdo, yatsa ben chorin. Here we're not talking about b'fanai nichtan. But we've got a different question. The person writes out a contract that says to an eved, everything that I own are given to my eved so-and-so. Well, since he's part of what his own, he is yatsa ben chorin, and of course he becomes now the owner of everything else. But suppose the guy says, other than something, and if that's the case, then he does not yotze ben chorin, because he never said, I'm giving you your freedom. He said, I'm giving you everything that I own. But if it's not everything that I own, and he says, except for something, so then that something means that I didn't give you anything. So the way Rashi understands it is that he therefore does not get anything, even in the event that he would say the specific thing that I didn't give. You know, we'll talk about this tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, because we're getting too far ahead over here. But that's Rashi's approach. The obvious question is that if he defined what it is that he's not giving, so then it's not Palgin and Diburo, because I said I'm giving you everything except for field such and such. So then where's the Palgin and Diburo? Okay, this is the big problem with Rashi, which we'll see tomorrow. But Rabbi Shimon says it makes no difference. He's considered to be a Ben Chorin unless the person specified that I'm giving you everything except for 0.1%. Now, since he might be saying to the Eved, you piece of garbage, you think you're worth even 0.01% of what I have. So here, let's test it in court. So if I'm writing that I'm giving you everything except 1/1,000,000th of what I own, the court's going to say, well, maybe he considers you to be 1/1,000,000th of what he owns, and therefore you get nothing because he left you out. Okay, in a case like that, we understand that he's excluding the Eved, right? Okay, but what he's saying is that in all cases, he becomes a Ben Chorin, and I didn't say, I just said a field, that the Eved would actually now be free. So then that means that even though I don't have separate statements in this contract, you are free and I'm giving you my property. All he said was, kol nechasai. But since there was some shiur, the din would be over there that he couldn't get any of these properties because everyone, the Baal could say, well, you know, maybe this is the one I wanted to keep for myself. So then that means that basically this is a useful contract only for part of what it is. It's only useful for the Eved, but it's not useful for the property. The other property, fine. Rabbi Shimon says, I don't care. So in other words, you, Rava, agree with Rabbi Shimon. Is that clear? The problem is that that's not how we paskin. Because the Omer of Yosef Bar Menyumi, Omer of Nachman, even though Rabbi Yossi said it makes so much sense what Rabbi Shimon says, the halacha is like Rabbi Meir, who actually argues with Rabbi Shimon. And as it says, Kishamru Dvarm Lefnei Rabbi Yossi, Koralav Amikra Hazeh, Svatayim Yishak Meshiv Dvarim Dechochim. Absolutely gorgeous. I love that shot, but it's wrong. Okay. So then, if that's the truth, so why was Rava going against the halacha? Okay, that we're going to see tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. But meanwhile, we have opened up the doorway to so many amazing new sugyas. The machlokas about the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael and whether you can move to Cyprus and get a great deal on a house and still be in Eretz Yisrael. This is a big issue now. They're opening up this town for Haredim in Cyprus. Well, you know, if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, it should be completely mutter. So we have that fascinating sugya, the Indian of a kibush yachid and its dinim, which is beautiful. Bachlok, as we've shown him, what defines kibush yachid. And we've spoken about the halachas, even binogea, the extension of Eretz Yisrael, binogea land masses, or only islands that are sort of bottled to the yam. And what is the idea of the gvul? Is it actually the yam, meaning the sea edge, is the gvul, and the rest is like a lake in Eretz Yisrael? So you may think you're looking at the Mediterranean and Tel Aviv, but you're actually looking at the Lake of Israel, the way that the Rabbanan, the way that Rashi is understanding the Rabbanan, and all of the various fascinating dinim that distinguish Surya from Eretz Yisrael, and this wonderful new halach of the chashivas of Eretz Yisrael, of the yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, that you could even have a contract written on Shabbos and tell the lawyer to take care of this on Shabbos. All of those things were part of today's exciting daf, Bezrat Hashem, to be continued. I want to remind
you. A number of buildings in the old city that they dressed up as Arabs, they were bought in Yom Kippur, they were bought in Shabbos over the past century or so. It was known.
Yes, yes, wonderful. And as we know, Rav Barnea, who's Oisek Kol HaYomim in defining the gvulas of Eretz Yisrael and getting rid of Arabs from Eretz Yisrael and buying buildings in Eretz Yisrael, all part of a major goal in life to restore the entire shlemus of Eretz Yisrael, and he should be zeicher to actually see the Bein HaBayis and to work in the Bayis with the restoration of the full kedushas haaretz.
As
amen. I want to remind you all that we're hoping Bezrat Hashem to meet later this afternoon for our siyum on Masechet Sotah at 5:30. Time in Yerushalayim. That gives Richie plenty of time to get the Talisker up here. and we'll hopefully see him on Zoom, though, and to prepare for the Inyanim of Shavuos together with the Inyanim of Siyum of Seita. So I look forward to seeing
Tzedakah?
You.
Tzedakah?
Yes. There's still time to get Tzedakah to Rav Kaplan. Now Rav Kaplan is junior, but unfortunately, but to the Rav Kaplan Fund. And I would be happy to pass that on for you if you get it to me on time. Kol tov, everybody. Looking forward, Be'ezras Hashem, with the real grace of God this afternoon and tomorrow morning to continue and even to be with you on Le'el Shavuos if you're close enough locally. I know that Richie was certainly planning on putting out his famous grape juice, Eruv Chatzeres. And don't forget, Esartem, Eravtem, Adlikas Haner, Rich. And make sure that everything is in place on time. Go to everybody.